ready to start. Yeah. So I'll take people on their word. How many people? So I got five right here. How many people tweeted it? So I've got one, two. Oh, come on. You'll get a chance later on. And there was three, I think, just from this area here, wasn't there? So these have System Center 2012 loaded on them. 16 gig. Who was the other one? I'll give you a gentleman here because you... All right. So I'll tell you some good stuff in a second here. We ready to start recording? Fantastic. Well, everyone, if you want to come in, take a seat. The show is good in here. My name is Reed Purvis, and I'm a data center technical specialist with Microsoft. And for my sins, I used to work for VMware. I was a VMware pre-sales senior SE, systems engineer for VMware for 3.5 years. And about 2 years ago, I saw the light. How many people here use vSphere 4 or vSphere 5? Wow. It's a bit like walking into the lion's den, isn't it? And how many people 2 years ago would have said that I was crazy for switching between VMware to Microsoft? Yeah, I was a little bit crazy. I'm here to tell you why I'm crazy. I was a little bit crazy, and I'm here to tell you why I believe I'm right. And I'm hoping that all you will become right as well by moving as well. And that's good, right? So this session is the comparing core virtualization platforms. I'm going to kind of bring up a few people periodically here. This has a lot of overlap with a couple of other sessions. One is VIR 316, comparing private cloud. There's a fellow, Michael Pasco from Olica, if I pronounced that incorrectly. So Michael is presenting this afternoon on the private cloud comparisons. This does have some overlap, so I'm going to try to defer some of those discussions. But I will say this, is that for the hypervisor to really be lit up, to really have the capability to go into the and see all of its awesomeness, you really need to have the management tools around it, yeah? So that's what this session's about. Let's get started. As we go through, since this is a relatively small room, why don't we take questions as we go through, and if I get a little bit too far behind, I will defer those until the end. Is that fair? Okay. So just so that the people on both sides of the room have and know that we're here, anyone want to give, let's give a 1, 2, big 3 shout, yeah? So at the top of your lungs, 1, 2, well, sorry, we're going to say Hyper-V rules. Everybody here, are you okay with that? I don't want to, you know, really impinge. We're supposed to be the soft, cuddly Microsoft people. How many people have, before I get started, how many people have met their VMware rep? Yeah? Okay. Anyone knows they have sharp edges? They sort of kind of like to reach into your wallet and grab for that cash? Yeah? No? Okay. Is it Michael? Oh. Out. No. Not yet, but we had a lot more value. So dollar per value, we're much better. So everyone, I want you to say on three, 1, 2, 3, and then the Hyper-V rules, okay? 1, 2, 3, Hyper-V rules! Awesome. So here's what we're going to go through. I'm going to talk a bit about Windows Server 2012. You're going to get a lot of this all week long. I'm going to skip through, you know, kind of go through this relatively quickly, but it is very valuable to have this as a background. Then I'm going to go through a bit about how Server 2008 R2 covers off relative to Server 2012. And then I'm going to go through and talk about some of the compete stuff. The compete and the competitive comparisons are a bunch of tables. Unfortunately, it's difficult to get kind of comparisons without doing that in a sort of a repetitive table-oriented way. Then I'm going to go through a bit about the specifics of how we compare to vSphere 5.1. Anyone know when vSphere 5.1 was released? Sorry? Yeah, what was the date yesterday in the US? 11th of September. It's an interesting date, isn't it? I don't want to say any more. I'm being recorded. just thinking historically. And then the cloud economics, we're going to go through a bit about that, and then we'll wrap up. So as we go through here with this, we'll take questions, and these slides will be ready for you, as the recording will be. Additionally, there are a bunch of slides in the appendix, because I only have about 60 minutes to talk, that you'll be able to read afterwards. Yeah, this information was as best and accurate as we could make it as of last Friday. And so I'm sure someone will come up and say that there's some little nitpicking corner case that's wrong. But as we do that, I'm happy to take those. So I wanted to talk to you a bit about what a difference a year makes. Can you believe last year I actually presented, talked to people about my background, and then they said, this Hyper-V stuff still got some ways to go. Hyper-V 2008R2 SP1, I think, was a reasonable hypervisor. It did its job, and if you didn't have an existing virtualization platform, it had some good capabilities in it. I'm not here to tell you that it was perfect. I'm here to tell you that it was good enough. I'm here to tell you today that Server 2012 Hyper-V is bloody awesome. It is a vSphere 5 competitor head-on, and does capabilities that vSphere 5 can't do, and sometimes maybe a little bit about what they won't do, just because they have their own historical legacy to start to protect. This is pretty awesome. So this is really, and Microsoft has taken the wraps off of their cloud operating system. So what does this leave us? And let's go and start with the big vision and how this kind of drills down. Everybody has these sort of three major clouds. You know, you have the public cloud capability. We like to use Azure. You have service providers. And then you have your own data center. And I guess the key thing I want to let you know is that we are bringing virtual machine portability to these. It's one of the things that Microsoft can do very well is have the ability to do this and move these things really amongst those three areas without boundaries, without borders. Basically, the VMs are going to be compatible. Anybody running Windows 8 on their desktops yet? Anyone run Hyper-V on that? Yeah. So if you're, how many people, those people that put up their hands on Windows 8 are running, VMware workstation? Okay. So if you go and look at this and you want to run a virtual machine on your desktop, run it on Hyper-V on the client, because those virtual machines are also compatible. It's the same Hyper-V. It's the same capability, plus or minus a few things, just because we didn't want to saturate a desktop. It's the same capability. You have a lot of the same aspects that you can use with your clients as well as with your servers. So you can start today. So let's talk a bit about, just from a high-level perspective, where all this fits together. As I said before, Hyper-V is really lit up by the management capabilities. And as we have the management, you all go through the same process where you have the admin and on the one side, the application owner on the other, and they're really going back and forth between requesting a service and delivering that service. And the hypervisor and its capabilities are all about providing the platform for delivering that service. Now, there's lots of capabilities, if you haven't looked at them, in System Center 2012, around Orchestrator, around Service Manager, awesome things. A lot of those things, in fact, most of the System Center capabilities provide the functionality as well on a hypervisor agnostic basis. But the hypervisor does light up the private cloud capability on the left. So I'm here today to tell you and announce to you that SP1, System Center SP1 beta was released. How many people were aware of this? Fantastic. A couple of USB keys over there. Yeah? Did you get one? You've already got one? Well, you can't get one. You can't get two. I'll get two. One here. So if you raise your hand and you start to interact with me a bit, You've got to answer a question. You can't just get one for free. Hold on. You can't get one for free. So System Center 2012 SP1 Beta came out last night. It's awesome. I have set it up. App Controller allows you to connect and start to work across clouds. So I'm not here. There's going to be a good session on some of this stuff later on. But from that perspective, this lights up that hypervisor capability. We all know that the hypervisor is what supports all this. But you can start to see where we're going. These capabilities to migrate stuff back and forth. I've not gone through a complete list of capabilities with this. Data Protection Manager, again, lights up more capability around dedupe backup, around CSV2. Fantastic, fantastic capability. Here's my favorite, Virtual Machine Manager, because this is what enables the hypervisors to really shine. All right. Let's find out another question here. So these capabilities are all sort of based on lighting up and taking advantage of the new capabilities within the hypervisor. So if we look at that, we have some capabilities around software-defined networking. And the software-defined networking is a fantastic example of where we need the hypervisor and the capability of the virtual switches to work in conjunction with the management. So as we go through today, I'm going to go through some of these things, and we're going to talk a bit about how areas like this get lit up. And the last little bit here, because I didn't want to go through 15 slides like this, Configuration Manager. So here's an example of where we're really working hard to be cross-platform. And you could actually just see that in terms of our management, additional capability for managing Unix and Linux and other things. So let's get on with where we're supposed to be at, and I'll drill down a little bit more into this before we get into the hypervisor-specific capabilities. So private cloud is really, and this is my vision of the private cloud, really this kind of capability. You have service manager up on the right, you have your public cloud on the left, and virtual machine manager really is a fabric administrator. Okay, how many people have a LinkedIn profile? Come on. Oh, fantastic. These are for USB keys. Not that question. I'm just getting the preparatory capability here. And for that, you end up having, maybe you're looking at a new role or some sort of new opportunities come your way. So there's a really great kind of capability that you want to put on. If you're above the hypervisor, so let me go in here and show you how this kind of fits together. So anybody who has this above the hypervisor line here, you have that hypervisor kind of runs across there. And so we end up having the capability of managing the infrastructure below that. So there's a kind of a two sets of words, or two words, that people call that. There's cloud administration above that. What's below? Fabric administrator. There's the man. Absolutely. So if you want to get a bunch of LinkedIn kind of job requests, you kind of put on your profile that you're a fabric administrator. That's the new buzzword for the next few years. And Fabric Administrator is the ability to bring three things together. What are those three things? VMware. Okay. You know. Sorry? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I would have taken three people with different... Awesome. There you go. So when you're bringing those three components together, the CPU, the networking, and the storage, you're really talking about having the capability to bring them into a cloud management. You're managing the fabric to provide resources up to the cloud. And then when you're above that line, you're a cloud administrator. The hypervisor plays an incredibly important role in bringing those three things together. And that's what Hyper-V does. It does it incredibly successfully in Server 2012. So with that, well, let's jump into, and now that I've given you that overview, let's jump into some of the comparisons, because this is where we really start to shine. So here's a bit of a brief history of Server 2008 R2. And we look in that, and then we come into Hyper-V. So from that perspective, we have dynamic memory. We have great capability that was released in SP1. And all these things, if you spoke to me last year and earlier this year, these things are great features and have a good capability if you're doing selective things. You're running VDI, you're running some light workloads. How many people here have VMs that are larger than 4 vCPUs? Okay, fair number of you. How many people here have VMs that are larger than 8 vCPUs? Wow, what are you running? Oh, sorry, just the workload type. They're database servers. Yeah, is that the fair thing to say, everybody who put up their hands? Database servers? Yeah? Anyone else have something different than a database? Yeah? That wouldn't be from those other guys, would it? That they need so much power on their, yeah? ZenApp. Okay. Fantastic. So when you're looking at this, one of the key criteria or one of the key limitations of 2002 was that 4 vCPUs. Yeah? One of it was memory. Absolutely admit that. But of the people that, you know, put their hands up, what percentage of your workloads was the big VMs or those big things? 2%? 5%? 1%? Yeah? Okay. So fair enough. VMware had a competitive advantage over that period of time. I'm here to tell you that they don't anymore. So you've probably seen these. How many people have seen these types of numbers before? You're all, yeah. So we are absolutely going to go and compare with them very favorably now. So you can see that we've got literally scale sizes which are going to hopefully match your biggest workload. Is there anybody in the room that has a workload that is bigger than these limits? Okay. I was really going to give a keynote for that. Okay, no, that's all good. So when you're looking at this, we expect that the future will be everything is virtualized. Yeah? It's coming. You know, we're in that process now. Now, I know that there are some people who come in and say you should keep it physical, and that's fine, because we'll do that as well. You put something into VHDX and you boot from VHDX, you can still have it physical. But virtualization will be predominantly the main course of deployment these the next decades or come. So let's have a look at some of the Hyper-V cloud capability. Now this is where we're going to get down and really have a solid compete. So before I do this, how many people are running Linux in your environment? Okay. So I love this exercise. It's good. Get your morning calisthenics out of the way. How many people are running more than 50 VMs in the Citrix environment or in your Linux environment? Yeah? Okay, it's too many. 100? 200? Okay, so there's 2, 3, 4 of you? Okay, because 4 people, I can give keys out to 4 people. You know, I have to make sure. How many are there? Was there 1, 2 here, right? Okay, there was 2 in the back there. I'm going to just toss it if I can. Oh, sorry. All right. Well, let's talk about the capability here. So if you're looking at the free capability of Hyper-V, this stuff is really great for running large environments with Linux. So if you look at it, first of all, you have a solid capability with a small footprint to deploy your environment, which is secure. Microsoft have applied for EAL4 plus certification. We haven't yet received that because, of course, that process takes between 12 and 18 months. We have received a capability or certification for our previous environments, 2008 R2, and we are looking at this for and heading down that capability for this as well. It all can be managed with PowerShell. So I spoke with a customer yesterday about how their Linux team or their Unix team picked up this environment and started to work with it, and they were so impressed with it that they've started to virtualize a lot of their Linux on this straight away at the release candidate. The PowerShell is very powerful. It also has all of the same features, all of the same features at the hypervisor level. So those scale limitations that are scale capabilities that I showed you earlier on are the same. If you want to have a Linux VM live migrate without shared storage, you can do that. Yeah? This is not download the free edition, don't pay Microsoft a cent, put your Red Hat, your CentOS, your Ubuntu on top of it, and live migrate your virtual machines from host to host without shared storage. That's what we're talking about. This is really impressive, and it's so impressive that our lovely colleagues over at VMware had to copy it. Hey, I guess they didn't like their parent company anymore. It sells all that storage. We like them. EMC do some great work with us. Hyper-V Replica. We continue to release capability both inside of our products as well as inside the Linux integration services that get put directly inside the Linux mainline kernel distributions. How many people? CentOS people? Yeah, those people Linux? In terms of that capability, are you running CentOS 5, CentOS 6? 6? Okay. So if you have the correct kernel distributions, the correct versions, you actually have the integration services already in your environment. You should just be able to deploy and away you go. We are upgrading those Linux integration services. And one of the integration capabilities that's coming or we're planning on or working on is the ability to have the Hyper-V replica capability for that. So the live migration works. The Hyper-V replica stuff is still to come. You need to have the VSS quiescing to do that. But this is a really fantastic feature because you can take every 5 minutes, as low as 5 minute RPO, do a snapshot and have that replicated. Now, some of the things, if you use the GUI, are not shown in the GUI because there are customers and people who might overdo their replication, but this has the capability at the command line to be very granular and do your disaster recovery. So this is a fantastic capability. BitLocker. Anybody in a secure environment here needs encryption? Yeah, a few of you, kind of the security people over here, a few, maybe one or two here. That BitLocker capability allows you to protect your environment. You know, we like to talk about customers that have a smash and grab in their front window and take the server out, and certainly the server is important, but it's the data on there, your customer data. Well, wouldn't it be nice to make sure that that is encrypted so that they can't get access to that data? I believe we're the only hypervisor in the marketplace that does this kind of encryption built in. Let me give you a brief overview of the software-defined networking as it's really starting to come to fore. So the software-defined networking is really a capability at the Hyper-V virtual switch layer. And the Hyper-V virtual switch has capability in it that allows you to live migrate virtual machines from one environment to another. So you went to the keynote yesterday and you saw Jeff Woolsey talk about this. Let me just be a little bit more granular. The customers here, you have customer A and customer B, and they can move over and live migrate from one subnet to another subnet, from one data center to another data center, your virtual machines, without changing the customer addresses. In VMM 2012 SP1, there is a set of customer addresses and a set of provider addresses. And those provider addresses live down here, and they are consistent, and when you move these across, they maintain their customer addresses. And in between there, in the virtual switching layer, we do a translation or a mapping. And that mapping maintains that. So we do that's called IP address rewrites. The other technique that we use is called GRE, General Router Encapsulation. I like the way that guy said it earlier on yesterday. He said GRE. He was a Kiwi, wasn't he? I love to shorten their verb. Anyways, so from this perspective, this allows you to do that. Now, this isn't, you know, a complete picture because we wanted to save a little bit of complexity here, but the gateway in between here right now can be a Windows Server 2012 host. And, of course, if you had your cloud capability at the top where you have your ISP, you would obviously can do some redirection there as well. But this is fantastic capability. So how does all this magic work? It works because we have something called an extensible virtual switch. And the extensible virtual switch allows us to plug in third-party capabilities. All right, before I bring this up, how many people, let me get the right number of keys, just one at a time. How many, here's a couple of key questions. How many people, what, name an extension that can be plugged into this virtual switch, a third-party extension. Cisco's vSwitch. Yeah, the Nexus 1000, absolutely. So I'll give you a key. Go on. There's a bunch more. Come on. Anyone else got an example? I just want to see who's actually seen this content before, because no one else. Am I repeating myself? Have you seen all this? Well, good, let's talk about them. There are capture extensions. So you can now put third-party capture extensions into the switching fabric or this capability and capture these things in line. Any packet that has and goes ingress or egresses from this switch puts that in. These are NDIS-enabled extensions. Here we're getting the audience kind of blood flowing. Anyone remember what NDIS stands for? Is this a Microsoft crowd? No, I've got all the VMware people in here. All right. Network device, what? I heard it. Did I give you a key already? Okay. I gave your colleague one. Okay. Well, you know, you guys keep getting. So the network device interface. So one of the interesting things we did as we were developing this, so all of the capability of Hyper-V was developed from the ground up and then overlaid with PowerShell. And when we did this, Bob Combs, the guy from Microsoft Corp who looks after this, actually took some NDIS-capable applications that we have and put it in the middle here and just configured it correctly, and away you go. Now, certainly we don't expect you to do that, but this is fundamentally NDIS-compliant capability. So if you're a person who writes drivers or you have somebody, that, you know, a third-party vendor that wants to create something with NDIS, fantastic. You plug it in, you make sure that it doesn't sort of overwhelm the switch and the capability of that, and it just works. It can provide filtering. So you have capture extensions. You have filtering extensions from five nines. You also have filtering extensions from Broadcom that have the ability to plug in and do denial service capability. And then you also have, of course, the big guys, NEC and Cisco. Now, one of the things that you'll have is how many people are running Cisco Nexus 1000 P4 vSphere? Oh, good. God bless you. Only one. Nexus 1000V, fantastic switching capability. We're hoping and we're really looking forward to having this come onto our platform so that you can then have and manage that consistency across both hypervisors. You have that same networking capability. The main reason that people used to buy the Nexus 1000V is because they want a distinct separation between their network management and the rest of their team. So you have storage and server management. So they want that demarcation point, and then they end up using generally CiscoWorks to do that. So this is the capability that we provide, and you'll be able to have this with Hyper-V as well. So versus the other guys, they have sort of one extension, you know, one extensible thing, which is or one replaceable switch. We have an extensible virtual switch, which a bunch of third parties will be able to bring stuff out. These are the four that have been announced to date. There are a whole pipeline of stuff and announcements coming out over the next few months with these. All right, let's get into the comparisons. So just a brief recap on the use cases of the free Hyper-V. These are the kind of primary use cases that you should look at for free Hyper-V. Yeah, we don't, of course, give away our licenses with that, so you end up having, if you want to use the OS, you have to pay for that. How many people believe that this is a good value, free? Come on. Yeah, this is, do you get anywhere close to this with the other guy's free product? Anyone believe that they get anywhere close to that? Okay. Let's get into all of the comparisons in detail. And as I go through here, If shout out, you know, your favorite component that you like to compare, and we can have a kick around with it. So let's be interactive. Big table. Sizing, we've seen a bit about this, but where do our colleagues sit? Now, I've made this one at the time when I created these slide decks with vSphere 5. Anyone running, hopefully there's no one running vSphere 5.1 yet. Anyone have implemented 5.1? You might have been on the beta program. Okay. Good. Well, if you're running vSphere 5, this is how we stack up. Did anyone get caught in that licensing change that they did last year and then have undone this year? Yeah? Okay, so those people who just got caught up in that, just bear with me. Anyone actually bought more licenses now that they can't use? Okay, so do you guys need keys? I'll just, you know, here's Microsoft. Microsoft would like to compensate you for some small bit for your pain. It's, yeah. I'd suggest that you go back to your VMware rep and see if you can't get your money back. That's just my personal opinion, caveat for the tape. good luck. It's definitely a pretty impressive, though, that we have compare favorably in this. So there's no reason why you can't stand up a Hyper-V host, run it side by side from your VMware host, and then look at how we can save you money on that. So let's look at a little bit more of the comparisons. If we look at things like virtual fiber channel. So they have virtual fiber channel cards. We have virtual fiber channel cards. They do it slightly different than we do. We actually put a virtual HBA inside the virtual machine. If you look at their capability, they run NPIV. Who knows what NPIV is? Sorry? Multipathing. I'm not going to give you that answer. NPIV, network. Endport ID virtualization is what it stands for. And the endport ID virtualization is the ability to actually have your fiber channel card or your capability go up, and so it passes through the worldwide ID into multiple capabilities above the hypervisor. So that NPIV, or it kind of has a V function, they call it, and that V function then gets put into each of the points that it terminates at. Well, what we do is we actually put a fiber channel card directly inside the virtual machine. And what that does is it means that all of the capability for your fiber channel packets come from that virtual machine and are secured from the virtual machine all the way through to the storage and back. So we have, in that case, a little bit more security there, as opposed to having the hypervisor in the middle that kind of unwraps this thing and sort of does a lot of kind of manages that process. And so it makes it a little bit better there. In terms of some of the other capabilities, you can see the disk sizing. Anyone think that, what did Jeff Woolsey say yesterday? 64 times 256 terabytes, 16 petabytes. Was that too little? No one? Okay. It's just crazy numbers, right? We're just absolutely massive. And then, of course, pass-through. We say that it varies because it varies depending on the guest OS. But if the guest OS can see it, fundamentally, we can see it. Offloaded data transfer. Anyone using VAAI? Yeah? So the VAAI, what array are you using? EMC? EVA and the EMC, Clarion. Are you using the VAAI on the Clarion primarily or on the EVA? Clarion in the moment. Right. So primarily this was VAAI, for those of you who don't know it, is VMware Array Integration and APIs for Array Integration. And that allowed, certainly VMware were ahead of the marketplace on that, allowed them to go out and actually talk to the SAN and offload capabilities so that the SAN's doing some copy between their LUNs, what have you. It would do it, and fantastic. I don't need, as the hypervisor, to be involved in that. So Microsoft have worked with the industry, would work with SNIA, the storage network or the storage group, and that capability allows us with ability to use what's called ODX. So the SNIA group, the storage standards body, if you will, is actually backing ODX, and ODX stands for offload data transfer. And I expect that a lot of the industry will start to come back into line and start to support SNIA's version of this, which is ODX. And so that means that all the array integrators, like EMC, like NetApp, you know, Dell, Echologix, the HPs, what have you, will actually go and start to support ODX. And then we're hoping that other hypervisors come into line on that in the future. So certainly all this offload data transfer is definitely key for us. And we include it in the box, free of charge, with your free hypervisor. So if you're running Linux, you're a hosting provider that runs a Linux workload, free hypervisor, ODX. Straight away, no performance limitations. Let's talk a little bit about the networking again. All that myth about PVLANs and VLANs and all the other stuff that we used to have discussions about with Hyper-V 2008 R2 are all gone. We absolutely support PVLANs. We support ACLs on the virtual ports. When you move a virtual machine from one host to another host, it keeps all those ACLs. So when you do that, they don't even have to be part of the same cluster. You can actually live migrate a virtual machine from one host to another host, and all the ACLs and everything will keep with it. We move all those port stats with the virtual machine. When you're looking at, again, the port monitoring, we have inbuilt port monitoring and port mirroring capabilities. Straight away. Is there anything on here that people need that's not listed? All right. Let's get on to a little bit more here. We've talked a lot about the live storage migration. Let me talk to you briefly about the background or the concept behind this. So when I did my initial bit of training, which was about 7 days straight in Redmond back in January, February, it's overwhelming. You know, you end up with all these people from the product team come in and start to inundate you with information that you've, you know, never seen before. And when I looked at that, and they came to me and they said, I said, how many can you do? We're like, what are the limits? You know, we used to have all these limits about how many vCPUs per core. Anyone design, you know, when you're looking at other hypervisors, you say, well, and 2008 R2, we support 4 vCPUs per core or 6 vCPUs per core. You know, what we did is we actually took a fundamentally different approach and said, as long as you're willing to stretch that piece of string or that piece of elastic, we'll support you. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to get great performance if you have 50 vCPUs per core or 80 vCPUs per core. You're going to oversubscribe that much. But there isn't any limitations. And the same thing with the live migration. So when you move a virtual machine from one host to another host and you start to say, hey, I want to evacuate this host, you have a 10 gig network, great. Move 10 VMs at a time. Move 20. If you have a 40 gig network, you know, move 100. No problem. So what we are doing is we're not actually starting to define what the boundaries are. What they are is up to the capability of the hardware platform that you've put it in. And so we have built this environment so that you provide the hardware at it and it will go with it. And our requirement in this and our job is to actually keep this at the leading edge of that hardware availability. So we're working with HP, with the other hardware vendors to say, hey, you bring out a huge box, it gets certified. Every certification now has to include Hyper-V. Yeah? If they want the Windows logo on it, they want the stamp of our approval on it, then they need to certify it with Hyper-V, and it's got to meet limitations, then it's got to go up to what we can do. So that's where these come from. And so you can go in detail into these areas, but the limitations and boundaries are pretty much taken out of the product. Last couple, a bit more on these comparison slides. Get, you know, in the box monitoring, NIC teaming. Anyone use Server Manager yet from Server 2012? Okay, let me give you a quick tour, just 1 minute on Server Manager. Server Manager is your friend. You actually want to, if you do anything in Windows Server 2012, just get into Server Manager. It pops up automatically. And you can do pretty much everything from there. Storage spaces and NIC teaming, all included. And so when you're looking at these kind of capabilities, NIC teaming in the box. Anyone NIC teamed a 2008 R2 server? Yeah? With those Broadcom cards or whatever. And then you had an Intel card and you were sort of screwed? Yeah? Absolutely. Let me say this, is that the NIC teaming now provides you with capability to team across NICs. NIC vendors. If it has a driver and it works, you can team it. And you can put it, and it has full load balancing and failover optimization. Pretty fantastic. We don't, just want to point out, we don't go and automatic, we balance the traffic, but we don't actually go and say you've got a 1 gig NIC and a 10 gig NIC. We should balance them in ratio of their performance. So we have decided, and we have done a lot of strategic decisions not to go back and be and work on a lot of corner cases. Does anyone have a team of NICs in your servers today that has a 100 meg and a gig, or a gig and a 1 and a 10 gig in the same team? See? But there's going to be one person in this conference who'll come up to me and say, "You didn't support 1 gig and 10 gig NICs in the same team." Well, it's not that we don't support it. We just don't recommend it, and we're not going to balance them out in that ratio. We'll just do a simple round robin. So if you stick to the what 99% of people do, or 99.9% of organizations do, or what you should do, you get a lot of capabilities here. Lots of aspects around the affinity and anti-affinity rules. Brilliant. Yeah, we have capabilities in there so that you can define a parameter, just a generic customer input field, and you can then start to use PowerShell or the management tools to say if parameter 1 and parameter 2 don't equal or do equal, or parameter 3, 4, 5 have this groovy complex analysis, complex formula that you want, then do this. And so you have the ability to have very customized capabilities for anti-affinity rule. And there was that cluster aware update stuff, so that's pretty impressive as well. Just sit back, update your cluster. It's all good. Let me get into the where we're going to give the other guys a bit of a kick. We have a lot of momentum. Where did I start in Microsoft? I started actually just down below here, actually. And in Australia, if you actually look at the Australian numbers, we gained 16 points of market share last year. I'd like to credit all myself to that. Let me be blunt. It was a hard slog. Yeah, I know how much you guys have had that past of saying, "I need this capability, I need that capability," and I don't blame you. You don't have to compromise anymore. In fact, come over to this side, and you'll feel the warmth and love of Hyper-V 2012. So this is a pretty interesting graph. The world is already shifting, right? So we are seeing where customers are running multi-hypervisor environments. It's the reality. Yeah, bosses don't and management don't have an unlimited budget, and so they need to squeeze those dollars. And that's from there. So where are we seeing? Let's go ahead and get into some of the specifics around vSphere 5, because I like to give them a bit of a nudge. So if we look at that, we end up having some capabilities. And so you can see here in Enterprise Plus, that's their highest rated SKU, and they charge you for it. You see where we start to compare the difference. Now, all of these capabilities are, for the most part, I think all of them actually, are included as part of the free hypervisor. So if you look at this, on your left, on your left column, the green column, what do you pay for that if you're not running Windows? Zero. On the right, what are you paying? A large amount of money. And some of these things don't even actually get included. You know, so I'll say this, look at here, process meter or resource metering. These things, if you get the free one, you know, you get the APIs, you have go wild with PowerShell, no problem. If you want the management and you want our System Center GUI and you don't want to go through and write a bunch of PowerShell, then buy System Center. It's a great product. It's a great set of group of things. But you can do all these things with the free version. So where do we compare? We have System Center on the left, and we have VMware on the right, and Microsoft on the left, and VMware on the right. So we end up having, and now they've come in and started to say, hey, we need to get people to adopt vCloud Director. How many people here are running vCloud Director? One, two, okay. So Yeah, here's another key. My commiserations for you. Did you start off with the Oracle version? You want a key? Yeah? Okay, sorry, I've got a...
Oh, awesome.
So the VMware vCloud Director is a product that certainly VMware have not had the adoption that they would like. So what have they done? They've said, well, you can have it anyways, now for free. Well, not for free, included with your expensive, already expensive licensing. So you have a bunch of these other capabilities, and some of them aren't bad. But they do charge you a lot for them. So where do they go? Here's the couple of quotes that I thought were really funny, and I liked Steve Herrod. Steve Herrod is a brilliant man. The CTO of VMware, he's a really sharp guy, very personal. Love the man. I wish he'd join our company. but he's right. These products, and they have gone on a buying spree. They have absolutely gone out and bought a huge amount of companies, and they are trying to madly integrate them so that they come up with a unified product set. And they don't have it yet. I personally believe, and I personally bet with my career, that the market will shift before they get that done. And Microsoft is helping shift that market with System Center and Windows Server 2012. So how does this stack up? Yes, please. It comes with actually seven capabilities within System Center products, right? So there's Virtual Machine Manager, there's App Controller, Orchestrator, Operations Manager, Configuration Manager, Service Manager. And I've left one out. VMM and DPM. DPM. Yes? Yes. So here, I'll give you a key for your question. See? Ask a question, get a key, or you can get a T-shirt. so let me say this. The question was, if you buy System Center, do you get license to run all the other System Center components? So there are the seven products. And the answer is yes. We have changed and simplified our licensing dramatically. It used to be that there were 108 different set of things that you had to or could buy in System Center. No more. There are just one System Center product now. It's called System Center 2012, and you get all the capability. All the capability is the same. There are two different things that you buy, data center or standard. You tell me whether you want to virtualize a bunch of stuff on a host or you want to have it just as a physical or lightly virtualized host, less than two operating system editions, so less than two VMs, two VMs or less, I should say. Then what happens is you can buy System Center Standard and manage that. If you have more than two VMs on that host, you buy System Center Data Center and you get all the products. And that's absolutely what we've done with the cloud capability. So where do we go from here? We end up having Windows Server 2012 with System Center 2012. I'll show you the price comparisons a bit. Stack up across all of those products there. And that's what VMware had before they came out last 2 weeks ago. So where do they go from here? This is what they've done. They've taken those things in the middle and they've bundled them together and said you can have them. I'll show you what the pricing looks like in a moment. But you can see they have these new suites. Fantastic. But they don't quite include everything. So they still end up don't having any identity management. They don't manage any other hypervisors. Really, they don't have a lot of heterogeneous support. So what did we done? As part of our comparison, we've also included some capability that they sell or add on extra so that we can make a fair comparison. So when you look at this, what do you get in the box? Sort of when you look at how this for a disaster recovery scenario, how many people here are running Site Recovery Manager? 4 years ago, that was a fantastic product. Yeah? It fundamentally hasn't changed dramatically in 4 years. Anyone running SRM5? Yeah? Let me ask you this. As your environment fails over from your DR site to, from your production site to your DR site, does it do anything about rolling back any application availability like SQL or Exchange or any of that recovery? No. What's the state of... Sorry? Okay. Okay. Well, that deserves a key. Sorry. I wasn't going to go that far, but, you know, you're... Sure. So let me say this. They do some stuff, and they've actually improved their replication capability. They've gone out. They're going to do some things. We fundamentally have and put a lot of that capability into the hypervisor, into the free edition. Now, I will say this, is that if you buy the free edition, and I'm going to keep hammering at this, you don't get the management. But if you look at System Center and go to the cloud capability, then you do. And so this offers a lot of capability here. Yes, we have some point-in-time recoveries. These are VSS quiesced snapshots. So as long as your applications are, and I say VSS quiesced, then we do have the capability to restore them, and they will be application consistent. Yeah, otherwise, they'll be just like SRM, and they'll be crash consistent. All right, so let's go on and just wrap this up and talk about pricing. How many people here actually buy software products? Okay. I get a little hammered sometimes in these presentations because people say I'm too sales-ish, or I've not done too technical, or I've done not technical enough. Yeah. So when you fill out your evals, the best ones, always good on the right. So let's talk about System Center 2012 and the licensing. As I said before, there are basically two editions of Windows Server and Data System Center, basically Standard and Data Center. And so you buy Windows in terms of either Standard or Data Center. And if you buy Windows Standard, you get all the same capabilities as Windows Server, Data Center, with one exception, whether it's heavily virtualized or not. So if you buy Windows Server Standard, you get the ability to run two VMs, two operating system editions, as we say. So whether that's a Linux VM or whether that's whatever, two operating system editions. Yeah? If you buy Windows Server Data Center, you can run unlimited amounts of VMs. That's fair. Yeah? And why we do that? Because you're using our operating system. You're using the capability inside that VM for Windows. What do you get? That's the price per two processors. That's a fair amount. It's reasonable. $12,000 roughly, or a little bit more than that. $13,000 for all of it. These are rec retail prices, so they don't let us publish anything else. So if you're looking at this from a System Center standard or System Center perspective, you can buy this together in a group to make it nice and easy for you so it's one thing to order. And you buy this called enrollment for core infrastructure. How many people have more than 50 sockets, 25 servers in their environment? Okay. For all the people who have more than 25 servers, you call up your licensing people, the LAR that you have, and you say, I'd like ECI, enrollment for core infrastructure. And you get everything that I've sort of talked about. The steak knives and, yeah. the steak knives so that you can throw them at the VMware servers. So you look at this here, and you buy this in terms of enrollment for core infrastructure, and Bob's your uncle, away you go. How does this compare? This compares to what you're paying for, fundamentally just the hypervisor and the management of that hypervisor. So if you look at We add a lot of value at the OS layer, at the application layer, support for a lot of those things. This is what VMware charge you. Fundamentally, it's a big number. Now, I didn't create these numbers. I have relied on the benefit of others to do this, so I'm not going to argue the minor bits here, but it's a big difference. They charge a lot of money for their stuff. So how much more? Depending upon how you compare it. And if you compare their top SKU, their way of doing this licensing in the large enterprise versus the way that we license in the enterprise, you end up with this sort of comparison. Now, to my mind, and coming previously from VMware, because I used to sell their stuff, I think we're charging too little. So I'd like everyone to deposit 6 times more money into my account today. No? I don't know why. It just never works. I don't know, you know. I stand up here, I add value, right? Yeah? I tell you what, the days of gouging for this kind of capability is over. And VMware are doing that. This is what the comparison is, and it's relatively accurate. I'm happy for people to come up and say, I only charge 5 times more than I would have paid for Microsoft, or I only paid 3 times more. I went out and bought a car last weekend, and I offered up the salesman 3 times more than the car was worth. And I felt happy to do it. Can you imagine that? So, think about this. You know, this is the comparison. So where does this leave us? You end up having the case that Microsoft just adds more value to you in the box. And you get it. How many people here don't have any Microsoft Windows licenses? So you already own this. If you don't own it, you can download it for free. So why are you guys not using it? How do I have to, you know, bribe you? What do I have to do? I have to come out and sort of put in your stuff? There are lots of partners out there that will help you switch. Sorry, that doesn't count. This is a version 3 product for Microsoft. Yeah. Yep.
If it was a greenfield, yeah,
hyper-V.
So, but if you own it already, that's a huge amount of money to migrate. If you're going to get a third-party integrator, you're going to cost millions of migrate.
So, cool thing. Let me say this, and let me address the question, because I think it's absolutely valid. If you have existing licenses of VMware, yeah?
Yep.
I'm not here to tell you that you should chop your left arm off to support Microsoft. Right? What I am here to tell you is that when you're up for renewal, or let me say this, 6 months before you're up for renewal, or 8 months up for renewal, you have a choice. You can look at the maintenance costs of your vSphere licenses and your VMware license and say, how does that compare with what I'm already paying for Microsoft? Because you have to buy the Microsoft licenses as well. When you go back to that last chart here, whoopsie, wrong way, let me go back here. This one here, when you go back to this, look at that bottom bit there. They have to add the same our licenses on top of their licenses, right? How many people here run a vSphere environment and don't have Windows Data Center? You're all Linux people, right? Okay. Where's the SAM audit team? These guys over here, 1, 2, 3. That's fine. That was a bad joke, right? I apologize. You know, there you go. Have a key. Did you get a key earlier on? No, this gentleman here, sorry. So let me just tell you this, that they have to add their licenses to our licenses, and you're double buying the same functionality. So before you make your decision 6 months out, look at how the capabilities match up. Look at how you make that migration. It doesn't have to be a one or all basis. We can, with vSphere 5 and 4, and with System Center 2012 SP1, manage vSphere and put them in a heterogeneous cloud. You can manage them and manage us today. You can also go ahead and look at how you can convert their stuff. It's part of System Center and VMM to convert it. Additionally, we have a standalone converter called Microsoft Virtual Machine Converter. You can download that today and actually convert your VMware environment, your VMware VMs automatically into Server 2012. So really, you're just paying for 2 cars in a garage, one that you've got, you know, registered and insured, and you're driving it, you know, and you're one person in the family, right? So I quit car. And they're both Ferraris. So because you like the blue one better than the red one, I don't know. It's pretty expensive. Yeah. Sure. So the question just for the tape is, what are Microsoft going to do with this other products like Vue and other capabilities that VMware adds to that? Yeah, so you know what? We have VDI built into the box. Windows Server 2012 has a new role that you can install called the RDS, and you actually install a scenario-based installation, and it has a broker, it has capability for application presentation, session-based virtualization as well, or session-based capability, built in. So if you want to run Vue, you still have to run a Microsoft OS in there, right? Either Windows 7 or Windows 8, I assume, or XP. You also end up having, if you want to have the session-based capability, either go Citrix primarily or use RDS. I would say that they have some nice capability. I would say that we have some good capability. We've dramatically improved the capability of RDP and the ability for remote FX, so we can do streaming over WANs, over UDP. Lots of good capability there. Are we on par for all the little features? No. With some of our partners, like Quest and others, there's a lot of capability that they can add into that. I would say, again, there's a value proposition there. Sure. And no doubt about it. Last year and the year before, when we're talking about Server 2002 and 2008 with Hyper-V, they had artillery and we had pitchforks. This year, we have Server 2012, they have vSphere 5.1. We both have machine guns. We're on an equal footing. This is a pitched battle, right? We don't expect that this stuff will be taken overnight. How many people here are still running Novell? NetWare? Come on. Sorry. I've already given you a key. You can't get two for that. But this is I fundamentally believe, and I don't know if I've convinced you yet, but I fundamentally believe that this is a Novell scenario again. This is, they have the sustaining power to live through this with their cash flow, with the cost of the money that they charge, the products and the value that they charge for that. I don't think anybody who has the historical knowledge would think that NetWare wasn't an excellent directory service and an excellent file server and did a lot of good stuff there. But it didn't win in the marketplace because they weren't innovative. VMware have cornered themselves in the market a bit, and I think that they need to change radically to survive. Now, that's my opinion. Yeah, I'm not concerned about those at all because they're untrue. So the question, just for everybody, am I concerned about having the argument that VMware is a small footprint, that there's less patching involved with it, that they have a higher consolidation ratio? The interesting part about that is that VMware have a EULA end-user license agreement and restrictions on who can actually test and publish data about their hypervisor. It's unfortunate, but they have legally hamstrung the environments to compare properly, full stop. When I was in VMware, I thought that was great. When I'm outside of VMware, I think that it's not so great. Let me say this, is that I've done the testing comparison, and I have seen a lot of private information that's not able to be in public, and those claims are just false. The patching that we have, if you deploy Hyper-V with Server Core, you have the ability to have just as few patching as they do. We have the ability to do bare metal deployments now with VMM 2012 and with a lot of the other deployment tools. There's a talk in here, I think it's at 3 or 1 o'clock or 1:30, whatever it is, about some of those deployments. When you look at those capabilities, there's no difference in the scalability. You can take a face value or not the numbers that we've put up. I can tell you that, at least in my experience with 2008 R2, those numbers have been real. Microsoft go to great pains and lengths to actually test out these things. So we have deployed clusters to actually test physically the numbers that we've put up. Let's wrap this up here, and then we can finish up with a Q&A if there's any more questions. So lots of capability there. vSphere doesn't give you identity management. It doesn't give you any of the capability to run the Active Directory stuff that you need or a bunch of other things that are necessary in your environment. So not only are you not you know, you continue on with VMware, you also have to buy our stuff, and you're just paying twice. So let's just kind of wrap this up. We do have a cloud OS. We have shaped this for large environments, for the ability to deploy inside of service providers. There are whole hosts of announcements that were made last night for System Center 2012, SP1, and a bunch of other ones which go on and talk about service providers and multi-tenancy. There's a great presentation later on today by this gentleman down here, Michael Pasco. He's going to deliver capability around comparing private clouds. You want to stand up and give yourself a plug?
Sure. I think we've seen in this session comparing virtualization, the platform itself, right? And actually, I just wanted to talk to that point about the cost of migrating to it. And certainly there is a cost, you know, if you use a third-party partner or something like that, or integrator to come and help you, or even internally. But the opportunity that you have there is to actually re-architect how you're doing that virtualization and use things like, the SMB-based storage, et cetera, to also drive down the cost of the infrastructure to run it. But also, I think a big point about it is once you've done that, and you've integrated some higher level into the stack using System Center, so improved management, then you have an opportunity to drive down your ongoing management costs by simply, making it simple to run and more integrated. And what I'll talk about this afternoon really is about, you know, that layer on top of the virtualization stack for private clouds. So here with the virtualization, you know, it's the platform. You need, you know, the changes that are available in Hyper-V really enhance compute and network and storage so that you can drive the cost down and get high scale. But what really makes private cloud is good systems management. And Microsoft actually have a great history in this. Their System Center suite, most of the products in there are version 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. And the integration between those products is really the key to actually providing a private cloud offering rather than just a virtualization platform. And so we'll talk through some of the capabilities that you need to provide private cloud and compare what VMware offers in that space to what Microsoft offers. And I guess essentially we'll see that the simplicity that Microsoft has there, the integration between the different components in System Center, and also the integration between the virtualization platform and the workload platform, the actual applications, that's all really where we'll see the differentiation come between Microsoft and VMware when it comes to a more mature cloud service rather than just virtualization.
Thank you. So just to summarize here, you know, we believe we have the scalability, the security, flexibility for this infrastructure, the high availability and resiliency. Just also adding on to the comment about Vue and VDI that we talked about before, one of the things that we are seeing with Vue as a good example in that space is the ability by using some of these capabilities of Server 2012 over vSphere, it's the ability to dramatically reduce your SAN-based storage costs. So there are a lot of costs when you're architecting something in the traditional VMware environments that do impact the overall cost of the entire project. And so when you're looking at that, it's the ability to have things like shared nothing storage where you can have that flexibility is a big benefit. And there are some incredibly large VDI projects which are happening in Australia that actually have millions of dollars saved in their storage environments for this. So when you're looking at VDI as a good example, the biggest cost is actually the storage, the single cost. That sort of leaves it here. Obviously, Michael's giving a talk at 5 o'clock in Arena 2 about comparing private cloud, and he's also giving Architecting Server 2012 and Hyper-V talk at 11:30 in Central A. So I encourage you, if you're interested in continuing on this discussion, here are some other talks that you might be interested in attending as well. I've put these in here because they're related content. I'm going to bring the slide back up. I just wanted to go through. If you could please do your evals. If you do your evals and you've shown me or proven to me that you've done your evals, I'll give you a USB key for all those people who didn't get one until they run out. And you could go in to win a mouse, which is fantastic. Obviously, rate me on how you feel that I performed, but also rate me on the fact that I've done a good job and that you should give me fives anyways. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to stick around here for questions. We've got about 10 minutes, I think, is that right? 10, 9 minutes or something? So until the fish. Simon. Yeah, so the question was about VMM licensing and separately. So the answer is you can't buy VMM separately. You have to buy all of System Center. So really, you should look at least two, getting the value out of two products.
So you spoke a fair bit about being free.
Yes.
So am I right in believing that Hyper-V that comes with server standards, Hyper-V that comes with server data center, they've all got exactly the same capability.
Correct. So the question was about the difference between the free hypervisor, the standard, the version of Hyper-V that comes with system Windows Server Standard, Windows Server Data Center. The hypervisor is identical. They're all the same. Same limits and everything else. The only difference is your licensing that you pay for the virtual machines above that. If you're running Windows OSs, you have to pay for those. If you're running no Windows OSs, you just get free Hyper-V and download away you go. Of course, you don't get the GUI. If you or support, you can. If you want to run two OSs or two VMs or less, then you can buy Windows Server Standard, same capability as Data Center. Or if you want to run multiple virtual machines unlimited, then you buy Windows Server Data Center. Yep. Yes. I haven't tried it, so let me say this. It actually was released on the 4th of September, so I haven't actually tried it. So I know you can manage with PowerShell, so there's no technical reason why some of that would matter. I don't know if they put a licensing restriction in there. But PowerShell, you could go for your life. Yeah. Two OSEs, two standard Windows licenses.
Standard Windows, how you can throw in your Linux, whatever else.
Exactly,
that
correct.
Doesn't affect that, so it's just like
correct.
The old
yep,
process.
Yep. So if you could buy Windows Server Standard, run two operating system VMs, and run as many Linux as you like.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely. Fantastic questions. Anyone else at the back? Yes. Yeah, so as part of the cloud capability that Michael will talk about, you can have Virtual Machine Manager actually have both on-premise and reach out to an off-premise, a cloud provider or a service provider's VMM, have them relate, and then you can actually